As South Africa responds to COVID-19 and aims to stimulate the economy and job creation post-lockdown through an infrastructure-led package, an opportunity shouldn't be missed to address many of the water and sanitation challenges in the country which have been amplified by COVID. It's much needed and would provide multiple benefits not only for the economy but also for many of the poor communities that need the infrastructure and services, as well as municipalities that require strengthening of their water and wastewater infrastructure. It was the focus of a recent policy paper by Trade and Industrial Policy Strategies, TIPS, and I'm joined now by TIPS senior economist Gaylor Montmasson-Claire. But we also mustn't allow the response to the immediate challenges of the pandemic take our eye off the longer-term ball of water security, which Mike Muller, a visiting adjunct professor at the Wits School of Governance and part-time advisor to the Water and Sanitation Minister and chair of the Water Institute of Southern Africa's Technical Committee, warned recently about in a Business Day op-ed. Muller joins us now too. Mike, great to chat again. Just kick us off. What impact has COVID had on phase two of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project?
No direct impact, Michael. What it's really done, I think, is distracted people from the fact that here we have a project that's supposed to keep half the country water secure, and it's beginning to stumble and stall. And I understand people are very distracted about COVID, but one of the first rules of disaster is keep your eye on the ball. It's very easy to be distracted, but don't let yourself get distracted from important things. And I'm afraid this is what appears to be happening.
So when you say no direct impacts from COVID, it's not as if COVID has delayed construction or anything like that. It's just that we're not paying significant or sufficient attention to the project. Perhaps you should just dial it back a bit for viewers at home. Why is phase two of the Lesotho Highlands Water Scheme so critical to the economy of the Gauteng region?
Okay, well, let me also clarify, because there'll be some very cross contractors if I say there's been no direct impact. They've had the usual problems getting people and material through the border. Their workers have not been entirely comfortable about PPE. And the contracts which are already running, and there's quite a lot of them, have been disrupted. But you see, this is what I say. Keep your eye on the main objective. And the main objective is that as of this year, the license that Rand Water has to take water out of the Vaal River is essentially the amount of water that they can safely take out has been reached. From here on, until the Podihadi Dam is completed, we will be having the same amount of water. And you know, the population of this province and this region, we call it the Integrated Vaal River region, 20 million, is growing at 2 or 3% a year. And that means, unless people start being very careful with their water use, that people are going to want more water, 2 or 3% a year for the next 5, 6, 7, or maybe it's 8 years. It won't matter if there's no drought. But, you know, we know one thing for sure as water managers. We can predict what nature will do. If you try to gamble against nature, you get clobbered. It's happened to Cape Town. It's happened to a lot of places before. We don't want to have a drought at a time when there just isn't enough water in the system to meet the demands. And I'm afraid that's the direction we're heading, and it's getting worse because of project delays.
And we're flirting with day zero. We've, as you said, already had delays to this Polihali Dam. Now there's a threat of a further 2-year delay, I believe. What's behind the most recent threat of delay?
Well, you know, I have to be careful because I have insight and I have external views. So let me tell you what Parliament was told in May 2018. They said by May 2020, contracts to build the dam and build the tunnel will be awarded and the work will be underway. Currently, we're talking about July 2020. The contracts have not even gone out for tender. We haven't even completed the tender documents. So the process to get the people to build this huge dam, it's going to be one of the sort of biggest in Africa, I think it's among the sort of 3 or 4 highest dams in Africa. We haven't started yet. We haven't got the design. We haven't got the people there to build it. And this can't happen overnight. This is a long-term process. So we really are sure that because of, and it's a series of administrative delays, it's actually, I think that people don't take seriously something that we only expect to have finished in 2026 and don't seem to realize that a delay in 2020 causes a delay in 6 years' time. Oh, we'll catch up, I was told. We won't. We'll actually slip in time. And this is why I thought it was probably the right time to blow the whistle and say, look, let's get focused. Let's get people working. Our objective should be to finish the project, not to get the Auditor General to tick off on every document before we sign it, which is in part what's been happening.
Now, one can understand a super cautious approach, given the history inside the Department of Water Affairs and a lot of corruption that has come to the surface. How does one balance this requirement for urgency with this requirement to ensure that we don't see a repeat of the past, Mike?
You put in a proper management structure and you tell them what we want is this project finished on time and on budget, and we will do what's necessary to get there. So if you have an administrative delay, if you have to take a shortcut, you do that. But you do it, and there are ways to do this. You tell the Auditor General, you tell National Treasury. Don't forget, you've got a whole government system in Lesotho you've got to manage. To do all of this, to keep your eye on the ball and to take risks and to do the things properly, you've got to have a top team. And I'm afraid that in Lesotho, South Africa's team is, well, part of them are going to be retiring quite soon. Some of them are quite young and have limited experience. One or two are political appointees who shouldn't be there in the first place. Pretoria isn't strong. You've got a new DG who's acting still. He's only been there for about 9 months. Hey, guys, you can't run a 25 billion rand project with a bunch of people who you've just brought in and, told to get on with the job. You've got to make sure you have the top team there. And we haven't done that. And I'm not embarrassed about saying this in public, because I've told Minister Sisulu this a number of times. And, she's got lots of distractions. But I really do think that this should be on the top of the agenda for now, given its importance for the economy of the country.
And Mike, in terms of the structure, what role does the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority play in overseeing this whole project? Where are the roles of responsibility here that one really needs to focus on?
Well, that TCTA, the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority, is one of the sort of unsung success stories. This is the organization that raises the funds from the private sector to build the projects that we need in the public sector. They built they funded the last couple of projects in Lesotho. They funded the Berg River Dam that saved Cape Town from itself until they made the same mistake again and tried to avoid spending more money on infrastructure. They've expanded the water supply to Tekwini and that area. So they are the funding agency for the project. They get their funds essentially from water users in Gauteng and surrounds. They pay it over to Lesotho, which then can get on and build the dam. To do that, they have to borrow the money. And by the way, that's one of the other blockages. TCTA needs the Treasury's approval to go out and borrow the money. And Treasury is also not being exactly enthusiastic about giving those guarantees, despite 20 years track record of this system working. So we have a slow bureaucracy that doesn't seem to understand that it's got to work in real time. And that's a public sector problem, but it can be managed. We've done it before. We need to do it again.
And that brings me, Gaylord, to the TIPS policy paper that you produced last week. And we see over the weekend the list of the projects from the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium gazetted at last, if not a little late. So we can have a look at those as well. But what do you see as the overarching benefits here of increasing our investments, broadly speaking, in water infrastructure against this backdrop?
Yes, thanks, Mike. Well, thank Michael. I think the first benefit is what really, Mike was talking about. It's really about water security. We have this looming water gap in the country that's coming. And, it's critical to water security for the economy and for society. We estimate about 3 million jobs that are highly dependent on water in South Africa, which means they cannot function without water. The second really main benefit is really around water access, water and sanitation access. We've made a lot of progress in the last 20, 30 years, but still very unequal access in the country, particularly when we look deep at the statistics. You know, if we look just at the surface, we see it's 93% of the population having an improved water source. But when you look at, is it really an improved water source, then you go down to 43%. So still a lot of room to grow. The third dimension is around economic stimulation, industrial development. A lot of the goods and services used in the water sector are still very much imported, and there's a lot that we can do to stimulate local capacity, and local production. And then last but not least, it's about really having a healthy economy, a healthy sector in line with sustainable development goals. Implementing very much a circular approach for our water and sanitation sector makes economic sense, makes financial sense. We need to improve the way we manage the sector to reduce wastage, to reduce the losses. And that's the only way, by investing in that sector, that we'll make it more healthy going forward.
How do we fund all of this as a bottom line question? Because the last time I looked at the sector, I think the gap was around 700 billion rands worth in terms of funding required to go into either building new infrastructure or fixing aging infrastructure. How do we go about funding this in an environment where the cost of water is still relatively cheap by international standards?
Yes, indeed. I think we need to really relook at the funding model for that sector at broad stroke. First thing, there's a lot of money now being spent into the economy through the stimulus package. And I think it's important that we allocate a fair amount of that to water and sanitation to invest in projects that are required. Then, as you mentioned, the water pricing in the country is still relatively low by global standards, but we need to be careful how we go about the water pricing. We don't want to just increase prices and by that increase inequality. I think it's really important that we do that in a very targeted way. There's a lot of room to raise prices for high-income households, definitely. I think that's clear. If you look at the high-income household, they spend proportionally a lot less than the rest of the country on their water expenditure. So we could raise that quite significantly. And then I think we need to review really the type of partnership that we have with the private sector. I think there's a lot of room to work jointly with the private sector in funding and rolling out infrastructure in the country in water and sanitation, definitely.
Mike Miller, to bring you in on the funding side, and it's not a new debate or discussion in the water sector. The infrastructure so far is not cost reflective as it currently stands, but there are the inequality issues that Gaylor raises about how one funds an infrastructure of a public good nature like this. And then added to that, there's the economic benefits. I was chatting to Andy Crocker of Astral the other day, and they have experienced firsthand what happens at a municipal level if they can't get a secure supply of water to their broilers, their chicken broilers. So there is a definite and a strong argument to be made to be investing heavily in water right now. But how would you prefer it be funded?
I think we are sometimes a bit simplistic. So supplying the Gauteng region, economic hub of the country, actually quite easy. You say this is an economic area, the users can pay for it to the extent that there are people, poor communities in this area, their municipalities are rich enough to subsidize. And by and large, this works. So, we're able to provide the services. We're able to pay for them. And essentially, we don't depend particularly much on the fiscus, although the free basic water element comes through the equitable share. It's actually a relatively small portion. The challenge that we have, the challenge that Gaylor's talking about, the collapse of services in poor communities, in rural areas and smaller towns, well, not such small towns, the former Free State gold hubs like Welkom are a total disaster. The problem there is, how do you fix essentially incompetent, quite often corrupt, and usually bankrupt municipalities? one of the issues which we don't like to talk about is the fact that we have actually a policy which says social policy is you get a certain amount of water more or less guaranteed. If you're really indigent, you don't have to pay for it. If you use more than that, you have to pay for it because we simply can't raise the money. What's going on in many parts of the country is that people are taking far more water than that free allowance. They're not paying for it. And municipalities, for their sides, allow services to run down. Mm-hmm. And where they have to buy bulk water from the water boards or the Department of Water and Sanitation, they just don't pay them. And they say, yo, you can't cut us off because water is an essential good. We haven't really come to grips with that institutional problem. What do we do with failing municipalities, with large poor communities? And one of the suggestions that's coming out from a number of quarters, from the department, but also from groups like the Water Institute and the Academy of Engineers, is that we should be setting up perhaps what they have in Holland, where they have regional water utilities, which are essentially cooperatives of municipalities, but set up and run on a very kind of professional basis to provide services in those municipalities and therefore get the service provision out of the political domain. Mm. So we don't have a politician with standard six appointed as director of technical services, as I'm afraid happens in many municipalities, and the poor technician, the foreman, who's paid, you know, 200,000 a year is now expected to run the water supply for 2 million people, which I'm again afraid happens in many municipalities across the country. So this idea of restructuring, setting up regional utilities, perhaps based on the water boards, some of which are working quite well where they haven't been interfered with politically, this is a solution into the future. So I'm afraid, I'm really embarrassed to, you know, to tell an economist that I don't want more money for water. But until we have the municipalities working properly and using their resources properly, I would rather not have more money spent on infrastructure, because what that will simply do is see lots of money spent, and in 6 months you'll go, and as we're seeing all over the country, find that you open the tap, and the tap is dry.
Yeah.
And we don't need that. We need to have infrastructure that works, because otherwise the benefits we could see from its investment just don't come through. We've got to make that money, that infrastructure, work for us.
Absolutely.
We can't just dig the hole and hope that by digging the hole, we've somehow boosted the economy. It's not good enough in this post-COVID stage.
Like with so many things in South Africa, it boils down to capacity constraints. Gaylord, the fact that we just don't have the requisite skills, to Mike Miller's point, in the right places. And so we really need to look at how we restructure things to ensure we beef up our capacity, especially at a local government level. On that note, we just have to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to be talking about the Treasury's loan guarantee scheme. That was Mike Miller, visiting adjunct professor at the Wit School of Governance and chair of the Water Institute of Southern Africa's Technical Committee, and TIP senior economist Gaylord Mommasong-Claire.